She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. Read for you by Natalie Nottis. All things, O priests, are on fire. And with what are they on fire? With the fire of passion, say I, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of infatuation, with birth, old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, misery, grief, and despair, are they on fire? Adita Pariyaya Sutta, The Fire Sermon. Part 1, 1345 to 1354. 1. Huai River Plains, Southern Henan, 1345. Zhongli Village lay flattened under the sun like a defeated dog that has given up on finding shade. All around there was nothing but the bare yellow earth, cracked into the pattern of a turtle's shell, and the sere bone smell of hot dust. It was the fourth year of the drought. Knowing the cause of their suffering, the peasants cursed their barbarian emperor in his distant capital in the north. As with any two like things connected by a thread of chi, whereby the actions of one influence the other even at a distance, so an emperor's worthiness determines the fate of the land he rules. The worthy ruler's dominion is graced with good harvests. The unworthy's is cursed by flood, drought, and disease. The present ruler of the empire of the great Yuan was not only emperor, but great Khan too. He was 10th of the line of the Mongol conqueror Kublai Khan, who had defeated the last native dynasty 70 years before. He had held the divine light of the Mandate of Heaven for 11 years, and already there were 10-year-olds who had never known anything but disaster. The Zhu family's second daughter, who was more or less 10 years old in that parched rooster year, was thinking about food as she followed the village boys towards the dead neighbor's field. With her wide forehead and none of the roundness that makes children adorable, she had the mandibular look of a brown locust. Like that insect, the girl thought about food constantly. However, having grown up on a peasant's monotonous diet, and with only a half-formed suspicion that better things might exist, her imagination was limited to the dimension of quantity. At that moment, she was busy thinking about a bowl of millet porridge. Her mind's eye had filled it past the lip, liquid quivering high within a taut skin, and as she walked, she contemplated with a voluptuous, anxious dreaminess how she might take the first spoonful without losing a drop. From above, but the sides might yield, or the side, surely a disaster, with firm hand or a gentle touch. So involved was she in her imaginary meal that she barely noticed the chirp of the gravedigger's spade as she passed by. At the field, the girl went straight to the line of headless elms on its far boundary. The elms had once been beautiful, but the girl remembered them without nostalgia. After the harvest had failed the third time, the peasants had discovered their gracious elms could be butchered and eaten like any other living thing. Now that was something worth remembering, the girl thought. The sullen brown astringency of a 6 times boiled elm root, which induced a faint nausea and left the inside of your cheeks corrugated with the reminder of having eaten. Even better, elm bark flour mixed with water and chopped straw, shaped into biscuits and cooked over a slow fire. But now the edible parts of the elms were long gone, and their only interest to the village children lay in their function as a shelter for mice, grasshoppers, and other such treats. At some point, though the girl couldn't remember exactly when, she had become the only girl in the village. It was an uncomfortable knowledge, and she preferred not to think about it. Anyway, there was no need to think. She knew exactly what had happened. If a family had a son and a daughter and 2 bites of food, who would waste one on a daughter? Perhaps only if that daughter were particularly useful. The girl knew she was no more useful than those dead girls had been.